Hey, we are the Lucas Bros, and we're on the tightrope.
We are witnessing America as a failed social experiment.
How do we tell this story in a way that builds the kind of emotional momentum that colorblind ideology built?
So many young brothers and sisters of the younger generation find themselves so far removed from the best of their past.
What are we going to make out of the nothing we've been given? How do you envision possibility?
Hey, Cornell, today's episode is such a special episode because we are here today with the Lucas Brothers, the co-writers for the new film, Judas and the Black Messiah. And also we're here with actor Lil Rel Howery, who had a powerful cameo in the film. Judas and the Black Messiah, directed by Shaka King and producer Ryan Coogler and Charles King, tells the story of Fred Hampton, chairman of the Illinois Black Panther Party, and the story of his betrayal by FBI informant William O'Neill. The film stars Daniel Kaluuya as Fred Hampton, Lakeith Stanfield as William O'Neill, Martin Sheen as J. Edgar Hoover, and the film Judas and the Black Messiah is set to premiere in theaters and on HBO Max on February 12th.
Deputy Chairman Fred Hampton of the Illinois Black Panther Party.
Repeat after me.
Looking at 18 months for the stolen car, 5 years for impersonating a federal officer, or you can go home.
The Black Panthers are forming a rainbow coalition of oppressed brothers and sisters of every color.
Their aim is to sow hatred and inspire terror.
I will learn all that I can.
These ain't no terrorists.
You can murder a liberator, but you can't murder liberation. You can murder a revolutionary, but you can't murder revolution. And you can murder a freedom fighter, but you can't murder freedom.
I'll say this, Cornell, we are about to have a fun time today. Please join me in welcoming our guest, Cornell.
Well, first thing is that they have put together a masterpiece by one of the greatest freedom fighters in the modern world. I didn't just say black or white or red. I'm talking about a visionary and courageous brother from the city of Chicago named Fred Hampton. And how beautiful it is to have the talent and the genius of the younger generation who put it together. I'm talking about the Lucas Brothers right out of Newark.
Newark.
The legacy of Mary Baraka and Sarah Vaughan. And then High Point, North Carolina. That's John Coltrane country. Come on, we're in high school. Then we got Lil Rel. Rel from Chicago. Curtis Mayfield and the others. They have brought us together to lay bare the life, the witness, the courage, the sacrifice, the charisma, the beauty. Fred Hampton, and we hope people will go see that movie. But thanks, Sister Kenya Parham, for helping enable us to come together. And well, we can just open it up to them because my heart overflows. It overflows.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have you all with us. I mean, we got a million questions, but first, just welcome to the tightrope. And I know we don't have a lot of time, so you know, y'all welcome back. I'm just saying that now.
Of course.
So what's the story behind the story very quickly? How did you all end up doing this, this film, and what really excited you about taking this on?
We want to say, thank you guys for the welcome, and we are, truly honored to be on your podcast, and we want to thank you guys for giving us the time to talk about it. But, you know, honestly, it goes back to college. We were studying at the College of New Jersey. We actually saw you, Dr. West, to have a conversation with Professor Glaude many years back
but at Princeton.
At Princeton University. So it's full circle. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. That's rich, man, brother. Right. I didn't realize that.
So we came across the story of Fred in Dr. Christopher Fisher's, I don't know if you know Dr. Christopher Fisher at the College of New Jersey, but we came across his Fred Hampton's story, and it always struck us as both tragic, but also like, why wasn't it more widely known? You know, why was it such a marginal sort of footnote kind of in Black history? And it kind of troubled us. But once we got into entertainment, we were like, one of our priorities was, we got to get this film made.
Right.
We got to get this more widely known, because here's this guy, a 21-year-old who had the charisma of a King or an X, who had the organizational skills of an Obama, who was assassinated by the state. And it's like, that's a story that everyone needs to know.
Right.
So it was a priority of ours.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Lil Rel, what was your thinking? How did you get engaged in this project?
Well, a couple of things. So we was all on a series together, the Lucas
Brothers,
right. My friends, and we actually had a sketch series on True TV at the time.
Oh, right.
Friends of the people.
Yes, well, yes.
Their desk was next to mine, right? So one day I was looking like, why are they doing all this research? Right? Like, why y'all doing this? Because sometimes they would research things and, I guess
for entertainment purposes.
They was researching, and I think at the time I was joking, like I was doing like a random Chicago character telling me, yeah, it's Fred Hampton. Like just whatever. And it's so crazy that, you know, because it's a full circle moment, they're like, yo, they was doing all this, and this is why we was working on our own show, right? And all that. And like to see it come to the forefront now, and that's one thing I'm really proud of them, that my friends are a huge part of telling this story. I'm from the west side of Chicago. So, like, this story is very deep-rooted in me. I know Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., you know what I mean? Like, when I first started doing stand-up, I met him early in my career because I knew one of the promoters. So I literally would just hang out in the office and just hear him talk for hours. Like, because, you know, he'll talk. So he's going for hours. And and when I found out he was, because I'm like, my family has always talked about, like, my uncle, you have spoken to my uncle's church, Dr. West, Pastor Marshall Hatch.
Marshall Hatch is?
That's my uncle, yeah.
Mount Pilgrim?
Yeah.
Missionary?
Yeah.
I didn't know. I got to stand up. No, you go back. He's my brother. You know he's my brother. Man. Yeah, right ahead.
I mean, he talks about you all the time, like, and how he talks.
He is, brother.
It's like he even invites me. I live in LA. He'd be like, you know, Dr. West coming. I'm like, bro, I'm not flying in. I'm in LA, man. But it was that's who my family is. So a lot of the historic things that happened in Chicago was always instilled in me. I grew up down the street from the house he was murdered in. You know what I'm saying? So like, I just walked to the store with my father, and everyone's going to be like, you know, this is what happened. You know, he'll point out right there, this is what happened. This is where this happened at. And so it just felt like I wasn't even attached to it at first. I had to make a call, and I don't do that all the time. I did a Hollywood move. Like, hey, y'all going to do this movie. I need to be in it now.
Yeah.
So I talked to them, and I also talked to Ryan Coogler about it. Mm. And you know, it's a small role, but really grateful to be a part of this project, and I'm just so happy that people really starting to understand the death of Fred Hampton. Like how, like it was. I think a lot of times the way they used to, you know, talk about the Panthers and this such a terroristic
narrative. Yeah,
right? And Fred Hampton at 21, right? And that's you know, I think the movie is gonna. It's gonna open people. I like, yeah, I know he was only 21 years old, right? Like he was only 21. Like
baby, yeah.
What he was doing was so
fearful
to the right people who were scared of him. They had to
kill him.
Because it wasn't just about us, it was about he brought everybody together and that scared him.
But see, what you all are able to do is to show the degree to which we trying to catch up with Fred Hampton.
Absolutely.
He ahead of his time. Brother Jesse talking about the Rainbow Coalition. Fred Hampton was already there.
Right.
He talking about poverty. Fred Hampton was there. Predatory right. capitalism, imperial militarism. He's right. already there dealing right. with the question of men and women, black right. brothers and black sisters. The way y'all work that love thing out, because you know I'm always looking at it through Coltrane's lens, love supreme. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's the standard. Right. That's our tradition. That's why Hatchett's family is spiritual nobility. They got right. love supreme. Mm. The West right. Side of Chicago, with all of the ministry of all the brothers and so forth. And what you all were able to do in that movie, whew, it's a masterpiece, man.
Wow. Wow.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, it's yeah. powerful.
I mean,
it was important. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, please, you go on.
No, I was just going to say, like, love was such a prominent, it played a prominent role in Chairman Fred Hampton's philosophy,
right?
You know, absolutely. He was all about love for the people, right? And that's one of the things we wanted to show about Hampton and the Panthers. Like, they led with love,
right?
You know, you can paint them as terrorists, but when you hear Fred Hampton speak, you know that his whole motivation was love for the people.
But I mean, even King was demonized mm-hmm. by the state and by the media apparatus, and his whole notion was by love, and I think Hampton's was as well. And I think it's very easy to call someone a terrorist when they represent an ideology that's in stark contrast to the sort of capitalistic fascist ideology that the American system has completely, bought and embraced.
Yeah.
And you know the way in which you chose to focus on O'Neill to tell the story, you know, did a lot of things to really shed light on Fred as an ideal as well as a literal person, right? Who was an amazing figure, an amazing human being, but he's also an idea, right?
Right.
And so it's almost when you think about O'Neill and Hampton as like, are we going to nurture this idea? Or are we going to be, you know, traitors to this idea?
Right.
Who are we going to be? Because the film really encourages you to think about it that way. Like, well, we killed Fred Hampton. Somebody killed him, right? It wasn't just the man who killed right. Fred Hampton. So did you all struggle over how much you wanted to, you know, sort of talk about O'Neill or center him? Because it really gave us a really interesting lens on how we receive figures like Fred Hampton and what kinds of struggles we might be facing
right.
when we're confronted with that level of sacrifice.
Right. So, I mean, philosophically, that's a great question. Like, philosophically, we've always been interested in duality. You know, you don't understand. You don't understand.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Took me a second.
In terms of understanding Fred as an idea, you know, Will is also an idea, right? And we felt like they sort of represented two opposite sides. You know, in order to understand Fred's commitment to his people and commitment to socialism, it was interesting to us to juxtapose Bill O'Neill's commitment to himself,
or
his commitment to almost a capitalist individualism that he sort of embraced. So we thought that it would be a stronger story to see both of their stories side by side.
And we were also playing with two notions of freedom too, right? Like, Fred represents sort of a positive conception of freedom, and we felt like William O'Neill represents sort of that negative conception of freedom. And we had those two ideologies sort of competing against one another
mm-hmm.
with the hope that by the end we arrive at a larger conception of freedom that mm-hmm. could. And then it's like the question of, can freedom exist in a police state?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, can we be free in a police state? That's a question that I ask myself all the time. Like, what is freedom if you're still, you know, completely overwhelmed by the militaristic apparatus? Like, what is freedom? Mm-hmm. Is it a concept that can even exist? Right.
Yeah.
But real quick,
yeah.
That's what makes this unique too. I think you guys are able to tell the story because, like, a lot more people, and we've talked about this before.
Right.
Honestly, a lot of us are more like William O'Neill than Fred Hampton.
Oh.
Fred Hampton is like a very unique person who's like, for real, was committed to dying for the people.
Right.
William O'Neill represents a lot of us that has to make, and I'm not saying I'm William, I'm just saying.
I'll be careful what I say around you.
But it's about making choices, right? You feel the pressure of being, you know, you want to fit into stuff, especially I'm in Hollywood. So a lot of times, you know, you talk all this stuff, but once you fit in, I used to talk the same way. And you know, things were missing. Like, the brother at one point talked as if the FBI agent was his mentor.
Right.
And I thought that was really interesting. Like, because he invited you in the house, he wasn't helping you.
That's exactly right.
Because he was nice to you.
He gave you a little scotch, a little fancy scotch.
Right. A mentor. Oh, that's a guy who's been doing his thing on his own, right, for a long time. Stealing cars. He was just trying to figure things. So it's a very, I think people, honestly, it's almost like a mirror situation where, like, yeah, you can say whatever you want about this brother, but do you understand kind of what he's been up against, what was created in our country?
Right.
Have to make a decision like that. And it was a no-brainer at first.
Right.
Well, it just hit me so hard because all of us wrestling with the spiritual moral question of whether we're going to pick up the cross to serve the people or be in for the cut to make the cash.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us have this inside of us. We need some cash in order to survive.
Right.
We want some kind of cut. So we got to get some concession for a system that we can't fundamentally change at the moment. But we want to preserve our integrity and our dignity. And we knew we're going to bear some kind of cross because we're going to love our moms, we're going to love our daddies, we're going to love our kids, we're going to serve them. They ain't going to be in it. We ain't going to be looking at them just in terms of cash. Right. So it's this struggle that's going on. And then when you look at it collectively, because see, we got a black bourgeoisie these days that got decadent proclivities.
Yeah.
They too much in for the cut, for spectacle and image. And want to act like they bearing the cross, but it ain't no cross. It's just a little, you know, popcorn and paper mache. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So somebody like Fred, he is the real thing. He bearing his cross. He liked Malcolm. He liked Martin. He liked Ella. He liked Stokely Carmichael and Stokely in condition. But I mean, he liked the folk who are for real. You see what I mean? That's really happening at the highest level. It really is. And so you all dealt with that in a very artistic way, because you didn't demonize either way, and that's very important. That's very important because all of us are wrestling with these issues. I like how you put that, Brother Hatch.
Absolutely, it's so interesting because that's what made Daniel and Lakeith performances brilliant to me. Because
yes.
Like with Lakeith, you can see him wrestling with whatever he's doing. Right. See where he start talking crazy, like, man, I'm gonna find whoever did it, blah blah blah. And he gets in the car and he's still feeling himself, but he's calmed down. It's just the way Lakeith performed that.
That was fantastic.
He's quite an artist.
He's great.
He did a good job of, like you just described, for Chairman, is that he loved Malcolm. He's listened to the speeches. He's, you know, like, which I love about the love story, that's how they related to each other.
Right?
That was
fascinating,
you know. So
revolutionary love.
Revolutionary
love.
And the sister, what was her name? She played a good role.
Dominique Fish, she's a star.
She threw down. I mean, Daniel, he did this brother doing his thing. I'm telling you.
So,
you know, I want to go back to this, you know, William O'Neill problem, right? Like, you know, how we're all in it. I mean, do you all think that we, you know, Cornell's sort of moving me toward this question. I'm going to blame him for this question. It's basically what I'm saying. Help me out. But, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, this get mine philosophy of, you know, I'm going to get mine and take care of myself so I don't go to jail, and I'm going to perform whatever I need to perform. Don't we have a crisis of that right now in the black community?
Without a doubt. I think capitalism has infected us all.
Right.
A lot of us live by the creed of, you know, how much money can we make? How can I get mine? I mean, that's some people wake up in the morning and think, how can I make the most money that I can make today?
But I mean, it's even celebrated. I guess what I'm saying is the thing about O'Neill was that we want to think of him as a traitor, right? Because, he seems like an obvious traitor. But when you think of him as an idea, now we're talking about we're traitors amongst ourselves in a bigger way. And I just think this film has the potential, because of the way it's dealing with those two issues, to force people, if they're going to take y'all seriously, which I certainly hope they do,
they better.
Then they're going to have to come to terms with what does it mean to basically cozy up to power Right. And you could have all the reasons you want. You got to pay your mortgage. Right. You bought a house that costs too much. You got aspirations. Your grandmother needs. You could have all the reasons you want. Right. But it's really not that doggone different, because every time we do that, then the death of the idea that Fred Hampton stood for is imminent. Right. That. Right. On the horizon every time we do that.
That's a powerful point. Powerful,
you know, point. That's why it's so interesting. Like, I was just telling somebody this the other day, and at this point, I'm just gonna say whatever I want. But you know, the gatekeeper idea, right? Everybody loved bringing that up in Hollywood. The gatekeepers. But I really think it's, if I could be honest, I think the gatekeepers are Black, right? Mm-hmm. I look at these award things. Not just the big award shows, the Black ones, right? Who they're nominating, they pick the same exact shows, the same exact people. Which is why I think it's dope that my friends did this movie. Now all these people that's been talking like, oh, I stand for us and I do this and do that, y'all still making buffoonery.
Hell, well, go on.
Way older than us. Like, y'all been in this business way longer than us. And that's what you've been doing?
Right. Yep. A whole lot of
gatekeepers. I believe it's our community that's gatekeeping now. We've obtained financial success now. We're producing stuff. We're writing things. It's people with studios. We can start doing things differently, but we got people that are gatekeepers. I don't care about them personally, because my God is my gatekeeper, so you can't stop me. But then also, I have what I'm, once again, that's why I'm proud of my friends. I have all these creative friends, not this, just a group of us. Our group text alone is the craziest group text in the world. But I got these brothers and sisters I work with that is not afraid to tell stories and make sure we're honest with our voices and not gatekeep, because it's behind that now. Come on.
Right. I mean, like, when we were constructing the story about Bill, and we went from the perspective of Bill, and then we knew that, as Ralph said, some of the gatekeepers were going to give us blowback, because you don't see a story like this. You know what I mean? No one would think to put it into make the protagonist the snitch. But we felt like by making the protagonist the snitch, we would have to wrestle with some tough questions. Mm-hmm. We would have to look within ourselves and say, well, wait a second, we're all cozy enough to capitalism. Not all of us, of course, but a lot of us are cozy enough to capitalism. A lot of us believe in the tenets of capitalism, and we live in...
And I don't think that it's very disingenuous to criticize racism, but then sort of ignore the menace of capitalism. I think King nailed it, that these two things are intimately connected. And I feel like, I think for some people... And the elites, they feel uncomfortable going down that path of criticizing capitalism, because it's responsible for a lot of things that they have. So I get it. I just don't necessarily agree.
Yeah, a lot of people seem to be suggesting Black capitalism is the new messiah. I mean, the way people talk about, Black capital and building businesses, as if the businesses are Black, everybody's going to be all right. Now, it'd be better to have some Black ones if we're going to have businesses. But the fundamental question is very much avoided. Cornell spends a lot of time, really grappling with that and pursuing that, but everybody's not that invested. So this film hopefully can create a cultural way in, to open that door.
Yeah. I think this film is a turning point in terms of where Black America is regarding success versus greatness. You see, O'Neill tried to be highly successful. Fred Hampton was great. The criteria of greatness is he or she is greatest who will be a servant, who will render whatever gifts they have, empty themselves, and ensure that they use those gifts to empower the people. You see, but still, he's an extreme case, because most folk not willing to die. I mean, that moment when he says he's willing to live and die for the people, it almost brought tears, because, I mean, that's what's kept Black people going. But most people are not going to go that far. We understand it. Martyrdom cannot be normative for the Black struggle. We're going to have a whole lot of folk. But it lays out what the ideal is. Then it swings over to O'Neill, you see. And so the thing is, this film, if Hollywood had any kind of artistic criteria, it went Oscar overnight, but that was true for Malcolm too. When Denzel and Brother Spike. But the important thing is that greatness often has little to do with winning the prizes.
Right.
You see, Curtis Mayfield never won a Grammy. Make Coltrane never won a Grammy. Millie Vanilli won two. So what? You see what I mean? so that if the Oscar comes, magnificent, but it's the greatness, it's the point of reference of the people who will be empowered so that you will be a voice in the caravan of love that has constituted the Black freedom struggle. That's right. The Lucas brothers. That's right. Lil Rel from Westside Chicago.
Right. Right. And what we say is that we're not telling any individual story. We're telling a story about COINTELPRO. This is ultimately a story about the FBI's relationship with Black America in the late 1960s. It's about a government-sanctioned program that taxpayers funded to assassinate a citizen. If you're telling such a larger story, you're going to have to go from different perspectives in order to get the nuances of COINTELPRO. Right. Otherwise, you're not going to even think about that aspect.
Right. I mean, and how they had to infiltrate the community with Black folk. And, you know, Lil Rel, your character was also working for the FBI, right?
Right. And that's what's interesting. Like, even just to go to tag along what they're saying, I like the fact where it starts from. Mm. I want people to remember he was 21 when he was murdered, right?
That's right.
Start from his childhood all the way up. You kind of, it can make it look like he lived a life.
Mm-hmm.
But he really didn't. Like, most of his life was fighting.
Right.
I think by not going so far back and doing all that, if you keep it to where it's at, it focuses, this is what you did.
Mm-hmm.
Murder a 21-year-old citizen for doing the right things. And you want that to stay there. He was 21. Like, I want that to, like, impact people. Because, you know, it's crazy. Like, when I was a kid hearing these stories, I wasn't 21 yet, right? I was still young. I'm 41. Right. And when I think about I've watched the movie a million times, but like my heart breaks that I feel like, dang, he wasn't even protected by like some of the OGs that should have been like looking out for him.
Right. Yeah.
Right. It's great, you know, like he like, and you know, with me now, the mindset is, oh, I got to make sure I invest and protect the young voices and people who he was just great.
Right.
It wasn't no protection. So like, I like the fact that you guys took it from that. And you, once again, you showed two different sides of it. We showed the FBI do what they did. Most of the time, they didn't do all the dirty work. I think they enjoyed when they pit us against each other.
I think so. Oh, yeah. I think so. Ooh,
you know what I mean? Like, it was a fun thing for them to see. So like, I think it's brilliant from where y'all started because a lot of times I see biopics and they do, it makes you forget about, like, because it's rushed, right? It's like, I think sometimes if they just take it from certain places in people's lives, that's what I would love to see.
Absolutely. And it's the fundamental truth that, you know, a genuine love of Black people in a white supremacist empire is subversive and revolutionary, and they will come at you.
Right.
And it don't make no difference what you mean. Obama put $1 million bounty on Asada in Cuba.
Right.
He and Eric did. We still love the brothers. They just wrong as two left shoes when it comes to what it means to love Black people, especially Black brothers and sisters who are poor and working class in the hood. We ain't talking about the Black middle class. They got all kind of little titillation and stimulation going on there. I'm talking about the ones who wrestling with hood conditions, you see.
Right.
So that J. Edgar Hoover and the others, they will do anything to make sure certain Black people sell out and crush those who have a genuine love of Black people.
Right.
You got Dean
Roberts, you got all the different Black plants with Malcolm, with Martin, with the Black Panther Party, with all these different, so that story needs to be told. Now I'm a Christian, so I'm trying to love everybody. That's me, right? But we try to love everybody. But we ain't naive.
Right.
Oh, we got enemies, and Jesus is running out the money changers, God dang it, in the name of poor people.
Right.
What happened?
He gets crushed. He gets crucified.
Right.
People need to know that's true.
But the idea, that's true. That's true, Cornell. That's true. But the idea didn't get crushed.
Right.
And in fact,
we got the younger generation.
Exactly. Exactly. And people like you who are part of the.
Fred Hampton is alive. Fred Hampton Jr. is alive.
Right.
The legacy is alive. The movement's alive. But they're trying to crush us.
Right.
That ain't no old thing. They still trying to crush us now.
That's true. But I think, you know, my whole motto is you can't fight something you can't see. So what's beautiful about this is it forces everybody to be thinking about, well, who is really doing the right thing or who's just looking like that? and, you know, what's actually going on. You can't fight what you can't see. So to me, this is a really instructive film. It's very powerful, very dramatic. It's got a ton of mystery. So it checks all the boxes for an entertainment standpoint, which is obviously important in this era. But it really forces you to have a conversation. And I think this has been, it's a really terrific opportunity to help us think, like, who do we want to be? Here are these two ways to be, and they're not the only ways. There's all these ways in between spectrum, and we got to decide where we're going to throw down our rope, and you know, that's where we're going to go. So to me, it's very hopeful in the sense that it gives us a feeling of options. You look at all the people in the breakfast, free breakfast program, and all the people just working on behalf of young people. They're not right. That's where the power is in there. Of course, Fred was critical, but they were doing all that work, and they did it after he was assassinated.
So anyway,
we're just so grateful to you all for doing this work.
Instant classic is the masterpiece.
Thank you. Wow.
All right.
You got the artistic, you got the spiritual, you got the political. It ain't all just politics. It ain't all just spirit. It ain't all just art. It's all together. It's like
it's really beautiful.
No, it's all of us there, and it's for real. That's the bottom line. That's what it's about.
Woo! Tell him, Cornell. That's the truth.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh yeah. No, that's that's Chicago and Newark. Chicago and Newark together. You see what I mean?
We got to get you all to come back because I got like 10 questions because all the comedy connections and, you know, how y'all drop out of law school a week before you're done. I got all kinds of questions.
NYU.
I got mad questions.
We'll definitely come back. We'll definitely come back for sure.
Yeah, it would be great because, you know, all you comedians, to me, y'all are, you. There's an insight always that is so powerful in black comedy to me that is underestimated. And I just want to thank y'all for that as well. In addition to this, because I think that plays a role here
without a doubt.
Of seeing just the absurdity, you know, it's like, what? Anyway, just really appreciate y'all. Y'all are welcome back anytime on the tightrope, and good luck with this film. And you know, you got
thank
the tightrope's blessing. That was just so exciting, wasn't it?
It was extraordinary. It was intense and at the same time, full of a lot of substance.
Mm-hmm.
Lot of content. I wish we had another 30 minutes or another hour to talk with those brothers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to hear a philosophical intention in a film, you know, narrative framework, I'm sure you were quite happy about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you can just tell they're intellectually thinking critically about this. And Lil Rel is right in there as well.
Oh, for sure.
Insights and wisdom. And of course, you always in the vanguard. We all following you in that sense. But I just thoroughly enjoyed it. I really did.
So we're very happy that you join us every so often out there. Come be on the tightrope with us as much as you can. Subscribe to all the social media and on YouTube. And if you want more connectivity and some extra content, then try to sign up at Patreon, where we have our own Patreon community. If you go to www.patreon.com/thetightropepod, one word. You'll see us there with some special extra footage and whatnot. And until then, or until we see you the next episode, stay strong and we'll see you on the tightrope. All right, Cornell, see you soon.
Salute you, my dear sister Tricia.